pretty, although not as desperate as those particular women. But what can we do with the past? Do we weep? Do we scream? Do we repress it? Do we refuse to talk about it? Do you have anything? Did working on this book bring you to any place about how to deal with one's past?
Do you remember yesterday? Yesterday was a really great session with Kanisa Lubrin and in Madeleine 10. And Eric?
Eric.
Yeah. Eric had said that Madeleine's book was full of so many wisdoms and aphorisms and was referring there. And the question you're asking me supposes that I have some kind of wisdom to offer. Right?
Yeah.
I don't. But I do know that one of the things that I was struck by, and I continue to be struck by, is that trauma binds us in pain. And so one way that we can recognize people who go through a traumatic experience, first is to believe them, and then is to listen to them as they speak. And so one way of thinking of dealing with a terrible past, which I have, right, is to talk about it. Because when you talk about it, then you can orientate yourself in relation to it. But not talking or holding onto the trauma keeps our language hostage. And we need to be able to speak, because if we can't articulate ourselves, we can't even say where we are. Right? It's completely disorienting.
I love that phrase, that it keeps our language hostage.
It does.
And I think that's something to remember.
Yeah, because people often say, I have no language in which to say this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it may be true, but, you know, humans have gone through so much, and we have always found language. We've mm-hmm. always found language. So what is it about this time that we cannot talk about?
Mm-hmm.
It just means we need to keep looking for that language, right? Otherwise, we get stuck in it.
Mm-hmm. So, what are you doing now? other than being here and imagining the shoes you're going to buy with those prize money, all that prize money you're going to win. We've had shoe conversations.
Yes, we have. But my partner Patrick knows that we don't have enough space in our little house for more shoes. And those shoes are mostly mine. So, yeah. So,
are you working on another book?
That's a trick question, because my colleagues are here.
Yes. So of course she is.
Of course she is. I'm trying to sneak in as much TV as I can. Yes, I'm working on another book. But that's only for the benefit of my colleagues.
Okay, between us.
I'm still in the idea stage. I've been working on one poem since what are you here now?
25.
Yeah. Since 23, I've been working on a single poem. It's not coming. And that frustrates me, because I've often thought that poetry comes to me easily, but it also feels as if I can't write any other poem until I figure this one out. And it's not coming easily. So that's what I've been working on. And I have an idea about a book, but it's just really an idea, so it's not worth talking about in public. Because, you know, ideas, everyone has an idea. Ideas are like, you know, everyone's got one.
Yeah.
Don't need to be.
Yeah. But it strikes me that you're a very persistent writer to take the amount of time that you took to bring those women's stories to us, and now, you know, years to bring a little poem, you know. But I know what you mean. If it's, you know, when it's not working right, and yet you still have the feeling that there's something there, so you can't ditch it. and yet it's not fully formed. Mm-hmm. And so what do you do in it? Do you let it rest for a while? You come back to it? Do you, you know, push it every day? What do you do when you have a situation like that?
Well, in the case of this book, I wrote 3 other books and a dissertation. Because it was not working. Right? So I put it aside and I tinkered with it and I did other things. And I think what I've learned, or what I continue to learn, is that just because something's not working right now doesn't mean I have to keep it. You know, I can just put it aside, do other things, and come back and you just look at it with so-called fresh eyes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very wise. I think it's time for us to ask the audience if they have penetrating questions for you, or even not penetrating questions. They can be superficial questions too. Somebody will bring the... Yes. Okay. By the way, this event is being recorded, and we're recording 5 events from the festival, and they'll be on our YouTube channel. Don't know exactly when, probably a couple of weeks after the festival is over. And at this moment, the Atwood event is already up, so you can watch that as well.
So now I have all the payments coming at me because I said that we had a shitty library situation.
Yes, exactly. You know, it will be international protest.
No, but that was a long time ago.
Yes, I know. It's improved. It's a terrific library now, don't you think?
No, Nairobi is a city of 5.5 million.
Yes.
It's got many universities, many libraries, many coffee shops that are open 24 hours, unlike some other places.
Unlike places like Kingston.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you tip the microphone up a bit, make sure we can hear you?
Good. Yeah, hello. Thank you for that. Thank you for the reading, especially, and the songs. I had a question about the What We Carry sort of passage that you wrote, and what you were saying about how religion played a role in the whole in the rebellion, but also the way they were trying to create a sort of a religious movement that was also a Acholi, and the way religion sort of interacted with the culture. And I was wondering if you could tell us spiritual aspect of people's lives is a big thing. And so any
I think it's true to say that when people were kicking out and they didn't have much, they had what they were taught as religion. They knew how to pray, right? And when you pray, you expect deliverance. And sometimes the deliverance doesn't come at once, but you keep praying because that's all you have and that's all you know how to do.
Sorry, my watch is talking to me. I don't know why. It might be asking me to stand. I don't know.
Yeah. So the formation of the Lord's Resistance Army, I think people have written about it and don't know that this is the time or the place for me to go into it. But then I think the main thing to say that people take their religion seriously. Where I am because we are. In this case, there is no me, there is only ever us.
Mm-hmm. And you had a question?
I might have missed a lot because I found that the mic was not very clear when you were speaking.
Sorry about that.
It's not your fault. You said at one time that you were you went into exile, your father went into exile when you were only 2 years of age, right?
Well, that's a very complicated story. It's very complicated, and I don't want to talk about it because this has been recorded. So let's not do the math about my age.
I just wanted to say that a young child. I'm so impressed that though you had left when you were only 2 years of age, your knowledge of Uganda, Africa is very, very detailed. You must have done a lot of research. That's just my comment. The second thing I wanted to ask you is, you write of such emotional things. How do you separate yourself when you're writing?
Initially went to UBC to do my PhD on these stories. And so after I finished my comprehensive exams, I fell apart. These stories were too painful for me to deal with, and I could not work on them anymore. And so my committee was very caring, and they allowed me to find a new topic, which I did, right? And then I had to figure out how to have a relationship with this work, and also to come to realize that I, the person who's telling the story, if I'm having such a hard time with it, what will it be doing to other readers? So I had to learn to practice care for myself as I was telling it or writing it, but also to think about, say for example, details about God. It's not necessary, right? Because if I spent time and energy on that, then I could expect a readership that is so steeped in pain, because the story is steeped in pain, that all they could do is feel sad, right? So then I needed to have a whole relationship, a whole different relationship of how to tell a difficult story. And it helped me when I wrote 100 Days, which is a book that thinks about memory 20 years after a genocide. And the genocide in Rwanda was horrific, horrific. 1 million people in 6 weeks, no, in three months, I think, it was 1 million people died or killed. I wrote 100 Days without referring to war. So that's 100 poems about a genocide without referring to war. So then I knew it was possible.
Starting with Eve for her curiosity and desire for knowledge, and Cassandra, who of course could see the future, but nobody believed her. And I could go on and on in terms of the fairy tales that so many girls in North America grow up with, where they're looking for their prince, and except the paper bag princess, which I particularly love, and made sure my nieces got it. And so I found it quite fascinating, the stories that you've shared, or the story you did share thus far, from Uganda, that because it frames a mother with perseverance and determination. And I'm curious to know if the majority of those stories in Uganda are very positive towards women and mothers. times, and which would be unusual in many ways when I, but maybe I have the very biased, I mean, I've looked too much at the ones that piss me off.
So first, I think it's important for me to distinguish the fact that even though I've referenced Ugandan stories from different traditions, it doesn't mean I know all of them. If memory serves, there are at least 40 different peoples in Uganda, each with their distinct languages and cultures and backgrounds and histories, right? There's no way for me to know, especially since I did grow up there. I only lived in Uganda as a teenager for 6 years, right? So to speak to a question about knowing something about Uganda. But I mostly spent my childhood in Kenya and then 6 years in Uganda, and then I've been away since then. And I know something about Acholi folktales because my father wrote a book of Acholi folktales. He was an anthropologist also, so he collected some Acholi folktales, and I have a small collection at home, only 80 pages. Our stories are usually not gendered in the same way as Western stories are. They're usually stories of, if I can make a rough comparison to the Anansi stories from West Africa, where it's mostly allegorical stories, but also, you know, animals speaking, right? And so we have the trickster, also the trickster stories of the West Coast, you know, with the raven and that kind of thing, right? So we have those stories where people and animals and everybody speaks and tells each other stories, but then there are tropes within those that usually carry lessons about how our lives can be, right? So the idea about a mother being strong is not unusual, but you know, Western traditions are very different in relation to patriarchy, right? And those were imposed now through colonialism, so stories have shifted, but I think our stories were not like those. I do know that in here, I took the story of, the story of Mary, the mother of God. The angel comes to tell her, you know, you're going to have a baby, right? And then she has a baby. I mean, in my head, she has no choice about it because God said, you're going to have a baby, right? And so, in the early drafts of these stories, I wrote something called the Hail Mary Chorus. And I rephrased the Hail Mary prayer using the names of the girls who were taken and then forced to become mothers, also not through their own choice. And I was sharing it at an artist residency, and one of the people in the group was a Catholic priest. He was so unhappy. He was so unhappy. He said, I was suggesting that God raped the mother of God. I mean, Jesus' mom. And I was like, oh, I'm just repurposing this thing. But he walked out. And I thought, well, screw it, I'm keeping the story. But I'm not making that suggestion. I'm just saying that there are also some girls who were taken by force and had no choice in the matter to become the mother of these children. Arabs and the Bantu peoples in the West Coast, the West Coast, are you kidding me? The East Coast of Africa, right? So Swahili was a language that's spoken across many communities, became the lingua franca in Kenya. So people from different communities could marry, have a family, and they spoke Swahili at home, right? But in Uganda, differently, people, even though they have intermarriages, they don't necessarily speak Swahili. Swahili came into Uganda through the Tanzanian army that helped the Ugandan exiles overthrow Idi Amin. And then the relationship became, the relationship between local people and Swahili was that it was the language of the soldiers, who were rough people. They were rough people, right? So people rejected the use of Swahili in Uganda, right? If you're from East Africa, you might have heard that Swahili was born in Tanzania. They speak beautiful Swahili there. It's a language of so much culture, right? Grew up in Kenya, fell ill in Uganda, and died in the Congo. So that just to tell you how Swahili gets to be used across it, even in terms of who uses it and how it's used and how it's broken up and that kind of thing. So does that answer your question a little bit? So people don't usually think too much about Swahili in Uganda, but in Kenya they do. In Tanzania, they even go to university in Swahili. You don't need to have English in Tanzania, right? Yeah. But in Uganda, we've mostly held into our languages. And so it's quite common for people to speak four or five languages fluently, right? So English, plus maybe both their parents' languages, plus the languages where they live, right? It's not unusual at all.
So does that mean that they had managed to hang on to their stories better than those places that have taken on a sort of an imposed language?
Also depends on the education system. When I was growing up in Kenya, from grade 1 to grade 4, we had Swahili lessons as well as English. And I could speak Swahili as well as I could speak English, because we used to have to be able to tell stories in Swahili as well. Sometimes the Swahili stories, sometimes the stories from wherever you are, right? But from grade 4 onwards, it was not a requirement anymore. In Uganda, I don't think they've ever had it. Although in South Africa, now they're teaching Swahili in schools. But then different houses, I guess. Do your parents always tell you the story of your tradition? I don't know, right? So in some homes it's important, in some homes it's not important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so interesting. Are there any other questions?
Oops. Hi, Sam.
Hey, how's it going? What an amazing discussion. Thank you both so much. It is a marvel of a novel. When I read the mountain pass scene, and I reread it, and I hollered to my partner, and we read it together, it never leaves you after that. It's a remarkable, remarkable book. You've discussed this already in talking about how the novel evolved into a novel from creative nonfiction. But you deal with such care and self-reflexivity about how you're carrying the voices of others. And I just wondered if you might reflect on it a little further. To borrow a phrase from David Sheriandi, what do we owe the memories of others? And sort of, because there are so many pitfalls about trying to share those stories and not harm them in any way. So I just wondered if you would reflect on your philosophy about carrying the voices of others.
Oh, it kind of sounds like what you teach in philosophy. I just want to get paid. I don't know that I've ever articulated a philosophy of writing, but I do know that care is important. And coming from English and literature and the awareness that stories are never just about entertainment or escape, they're also about representation, right? And so at the same time as I was thinking about how to carry the voices of these women, I was also thinking, how do I carry my own voice through and my own politics? There's a section in the book called Considerations, and it's the only part of the book that I kept that largely carries my own voice, right? Which was very angry. Right? I think it was. I had to work through my own anger and remember that this is not about me being angry. This is about this situation. This is about a job that I have to do, which is to tell these stories, but also think about how do I represent the women who come from my community and us, so that we are not always, so that we are not locked. Because when it's published, it's locked, right? You can't go back and do it. So that we're not locked only in a history of pain and suffering, right? And then how do you counter the other representations of us? So, for example, I'll tell you a story about, here it appears as my son is a story. And I had read an article from the BBC where a journalist had gone to a battlefield in Uganda, and he had, a battlefield between the government of Uganda and the Lost Resistance Army. And so he was there witnessing the dead and that. And the government spokesperson was telling him that, you know, the survivors, the kids, when we take them, they're survivors. We don't call them rebels. But all the dead are counted as rebels. And what struck me about that article is that the journalist remembered that one of the dead was a toddler, right? And I thought, what are the chances that this two-year-old would be a rebel? How does a two-year-old become a rebel? And so my son is a story, is a response to that, right? And so I already forgot the question, but I was just thinking about how do I write myself in and also out, and also keep remembering, thinking about the people, my responsibility to tell the stories of these women, which is also telling the stories of us through this particular time in history.
Well, I think we'll end there. That's okay. A perfect place to end. Thank you so much, Antonia.
Thank you.
Thank you both for a very memorable and moving conversation on stage this morning. Thank you to all of you for coming and being with us at this event. We want to know how you feel about it, and so please go to our online survey, www.kingston.ca, and tell us how you experienced it today. Everything about your festival experience we're interested in. Just a reminder that our silent auction for the two handmaids costumes is ongoing out in the foyer. You have until 7 o'clock tonight to bid, and the winner will be announced at the end of Follow the Threads, our evening session tonight. Now, please join Marilyn and Antonia out in the foyer to get your book signed. If you haven't got the book yet, and I know you want to, you can pick it up in the Novel Idea Bookshop, which is just in the far corner off the foyer. Thank you again for being with us. Thank you to our wonderful audience.
And you just heard, again, a previously unaired event from September 19th, 2025, a Kingston Writers' Fest event called What We Carry. And that was a conversation between moderator Marilyn Simons and Antonio J. Okotbitek, author and poet. It was, again, a nearly 90-minute conversation and reading, and it did run uninterrupted since it began now until now, so 34 minutes after. So anyway, it is 34 minutes after 5 o'clock, and you have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are streaming live online every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock at www.cfrc.ca as well. Again, just a reminder that every week I upload both hours of this show to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. They do remain there for 3 years. I usually try to get that done by about 7 o'clock in the evening after I get home. And just a short mention, I recorded 10 events in total at the Kingston Writers Fest this past fall and began airing them earlier this month. This is the third of those. So there are seven more to go. So goes to show that I will intersperse them as well between current things going on. In fact, next week I will be airing the January and the Journey Continues open mic reading the event from the January, I think it was 3rd, open mic event at the Elm Cafe, and and that'll be just sort of ahead of the one that's the February one that's coming up. So crazy how quickly this month is flying by. So anyway, between that and book launch events that are starting to happen again now, and perhaps other reading events, I will intersperse the Kingston Writers Fest events in between more current events happening to keep things moving at a pace so things don't have to wait too long. So anyway, before we move on, I would like to extend my heartfelt thanks to all of you out there for having tuned in to this first hour and a half plus minutes of the show, and an equal thanks to Kingston Writers Fest, their staff, and volunteers, to Marilyn and Antonia and all who were involved in this in presenting this wonderful event. And as just mentioned, I look forward to bringing more events from that series last fall. Today, I do have some announcements and information to share, I even have a song to share at the end of the show, and so we'll be doing that. But before we do that, I suppose I should do this first.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Hello and welcome to Salt Licked in Rapture. I'm your host, Nishan Tung. Salt Licked in Rapture is a sonic exploration of, to quote Virginia Woolf, violent waves of emotion. Featuring both known and lesser-known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Guys, gals, non-binary pals, different circles is moving. Same day, different time slot. We're now on Fridays at 9 p.m. Join me from 9 to 10 p.m. for an adventure through sound. Who knows, you might just find your next favorite song.
And you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And we do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And welcome back now, I guess, into what we might just call the second segment of this show. There are a few minutes left here that will allow me to share some upcoming events and calls for submissions. And again, I do have a song that will take us into the next show, and we'll talk about all of that in a bit. But it is, it just turned to 40 minutes after 5 o'clock. So let me grab the list of calls and events here. And I think I'll kind of do what I've been doing is I've got 4 calls this time that are rapidly approaching, or at least fairly rapidly approaching. One is definitely, it's a January 25th deadline. It's the Kraft 2025 Memoir Excerpt and Essay Contest. It says it's open to all writers, emerging and experienced. They are looking for previously unpublished creative nonfiction, 6,000-word max. For complete info and how to submit, go to their link. And it's if I gave you the a specific link, it's like way too long. So I'm just going to tell you, go to click on, just go enter Kraft 2025 Memoir Accept and Excerpt and Essay Contest into your search engine, and it should take you right there, especially if you look for the contest, or just just go to Kraft even, and you can page down from there, find the right sublink for this contest. Again, the deadline's January 25th. Malahat Reviews Novella Prize. It's biannual, I believe. It is $2,000, and work will be published in their summer 2026 issue, it says. The length they're looking for is 10,000 to 20,000 words. Full details on their website as well. Again, I'll just suggest you go to Malahat Review, and on that site look for their novella prize, and should get you there. And that deadline is February 1st. Masters Review with their 2025-2026 Winter Short Story Award for new writers. Since it says since 2016, their short story award has connected emerging writers with some top literary agents. So what they're suggesting is please submit original fiction or narrative nonfiction up to 6,000 words. The first prize is $3,000. Second and third, $300 and $200. Again, go to the Master's Review, and once you get there, look for, so I'm guessing just www.themastersreview, and once there, check for their 2025-2026 Winter Short Story Award for new writers. And then the final one is local, and this one, I'm sorry, the deadline for that award, to apply for that is, or to enter for that is February 1st as well. And then this one, February 2nd, is local, although it attracts, I believe, acts from all over the place. But it's the 2026 TK Fringe Festival. It's Theater Kingston's 2026 Fringe Festival. It says their applications are open, have been open, and they will be open until February 2nd. And the festival runs itself from August 6th through the 16th, but the deadline for the draw is now very quickly approaching. The deadline is February 2nd, and then what happens, everything goes into a big basket of sorts, I guess, and the lottery pull then is going to happen on February 22nd, www.theaterkingston.com, and then I think / about the TK Fringe should get you right to that page. Again, February 2nd is the deadline. Let's go ahead while I have some time to move into some events. There are things starting to happen. Now, coming up is, let me see if I'm on the right page here. Yeah. It's hard to believe. It's coming up right away. Theodore Christou and me will be launching our new collections of poetry. His is called Torch Song for Grace. Mine is called Ever Crossings. Jason Heroux will be the MC and will most likely read a bit from his own work as well. It's coming up at Novel Idea Bookstore. I think everybody knows where it is, but it's 156 Princess Street here in Kingston. The event's coming up this Tuesday, January 27th, 7 p.m. Then there is also, following that, on Thursday evening, again at Novel Idea, another book launch. It's Michael Robertson. We'll be launching Ballroom at, again, Novel Idea. Again, that's on January 29th. Makes mention, too, that it is the first night of Reel Out and Novel Idea. I will mention it's a little bit early. Most launches start at 7 there, but this one will run from 6 to 8. So be sure and don't wait until 7 because that's what you're used to. So anyway, Lit Live, that's a series in Hamilton. It happens on the first Sunday of the month, September through June. Lit Live runs at Staircase Cafe and Theater. Again, a first Sunday evening of the month show. A door is pay what you can, although they suggest $5 to $10. Details, go to their Facebook page, Lit Live Reading Series. I think I've had the best luck there. It's happening at the Staircase Cafe and Theater, 27 Dundurn Street North in Hamilton. Coming up on February 3rd is the next, already mentioned this reading series, but the next in the monthly open mic reading series called And the Journey Continues. Happens at the Elm Cafe. The series runs, it's the first Tuesday night of the month series. The Elm is our fourth venue. It's been running since 2009. Yeah, crazy. Anyway, doors open at 6:30. Again, February 3rd runs from 7 to 9:15, located at 303 Montreal Street. Mention one more here, and then I think I'm going to have to do something else. I've got a couple of other things to air. There's another first Tuesday night of the month series that's pretty close by. This is happening in Madoc. It's called the First Tuesday Muse. Again, a first Tuesday night of the month series hosted by TJ Best. Check out their Facebook page for info and updates all the time. They're good about keeping that up to date. It's happening at Finn's Pub and Patio, 231 Durham Street South there in Madoc. And again, Tuesday, February 3rd, 7 to 9 p.m. Tell you what, I'm going to do this and then I'll just be right back. How's that?
Greetings, loved ones. This is DJ Nasty Nexus coming to you live and direct from CFRC 101.9. I'm here to bring you the goods from my new show, Classless Radio, airing every Friday night at 11 p.m. I'll be giving you hits and hidden gems all the way from jazz to blues and hip-hop and R&B. Music from the soul that everybody needs. Hop on my wavelengths and get right with the kid to kick off your big weekend. Stay tuned.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
Walk quietly by, he won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here, Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
And welcome back. You are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And we'll also mention that both hours, let me just get make sure I'm not skipping something here. I upload both hours of this show each week to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. They do remain there for 3 years, and so you can always catch it there. I try to get that done by about 7 o'clock. And what else have I got here? Really want to suggest that you do stay tuned for 2 hours of East Coast music in a show called Saltwater Music that's hosted by Rob Carnell. That comes up right at the top of the hour. I do have a song to take us there today. I'm going back to, I believe it's 2003, Massive Attack album called 100th Window. The song is called Every When, that will take me out of here and straight into his show. So, again, I hope you stay tuned for that. I do also hope that you have a great week, and I will catch you here next week again with something from the open mic. Here we go. Thanks a lot.
Bye.